You're tuned to Northfolk Works on WPKN, and I'm Hazel Kahn. Today, I'm very happy indeed to be sitting with Bob Jester again at his home to see him in good spirits and surrounded by a wheelchair and things like that. But this is the third time Bob has been my guest. The first time was on April 4th, 2012. Bob, you'd come to my house in your wearing your chimney sweep hat. Before I forget, if people want to know about that interview and the other interview, in addition to this third one, they're all on my website.
It's great.
HazelKahn.com. So that was the mode that I actually met you in, was as chimney sweep. And then I found out that you were also, in fact, a high school science teacher.
That's correct.
And many other things. But the next time was on April the 3rd, 2019, which was 3 years after a terrible accident changed your life, which may now be taking place with a wheelchair central to your life, but not in any existential way, Bob. You're still Bob Jester. And you, the audience, will see what I mean after we start our conversation, and Bob, rather than I, will do most of the talking. So welcome to Northfolk Works again, Bob. And am I right about the dates?
That's correct. Exactly right.
Now it's been how long since your accident?
It will be 7 years in June. July.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So you and I chatted for a while last week before we start to actually record this interview, and I came away thinking that you're still doing the same things you always did. Even though you're not clambering up chimneys and roofs anymore, you're still teaching kids, you're still working in or for or around the Greenport Fire Department. Your innate curiosity is still taking you to investigate scientific things, virtual reality in particular, and you're still a vigorous participant in Greenport's community.
Oh, thank you.
Can we start then by talking about virtual reality? But you've told me that really for you it's been important for pain management.
Very definitely.
So let's start by you talking about that.
Well, I want to begin by thanking you for this opportunity, because there are several things I'd really like to share with people who are dealing with chronic pain. And I think that the information that I've obtained over these 7 years might be of value to them. When I was teaching high school biology, we often talked about evolution. And we talked about evolution being a gradual process, kind of like a branching tree. But then a new theory of evolution came along, one that I accept a little bit more than this gradualism type of thing, and it's called punctuated equilibria. It says that living things basically remain stable for quite some time, and then something happens where there's a burst, a rapid explosion of evolution. You can talk about species doing responding that way, but you can also talk about people responding that way. 7 years ago, I was climbing chimneys, like you said, and running through all the normal routine of a regular work day. And then on one specific day, by the end of the day, I found myself on a helicopter being taken to Stony Brook Hospital for an all-night surgery that involved several transfusions. I woke up in the morning and I had two rods going down my back. I had 19 broken bones and 16 bolts in my vertebrae, and no control of anything from my waist down. So that was the key to a sudden change in evolution for me. One day, everything's going along nice and smooth, and the next day, I'm 180 degrees going in a different direction. And the different direction took me from Stony Brook Hospital to Rusk in Manhattan, where I received rehab for almost a month and learned a lot about pain there and how they deal with it. It was followed by another month out here at Peconic Landing. And after that month at Peconic Landing, the people there in the rehab area allowed me to come every day for 4 to 5 hours and worked on the machines, and they allowed me to do that. And that happened up until the time of COVID. But what I really wanted to talk to you about is this thing about pain. The machines were basically for exercise, for the legs, for the arms, and so on. And because of my situation, I wanted to keep a pressure on my entire vertical skeleton. And so I took an hour or so every day and got into a standing machine and was able to stand up and read and put pressure on all the joints and everything, which was very good for me. These players in here are the ones that really had an effect on how I I've ultimately sought to deal with this pain. I mentioned to you and admit the pain is constant all day. It's just different degrees of pain. I go to meetings periodically and sometimes people will notice I'll be sitting there trying to not make any noise or anything, but tears will be running down my face. I've broken all my back teeth clenching down on because of pain. Mm. So it's a real pain, but I've learned to deal with it. And that's what I wanted to share with people that might be listening.
Then ask you an ignorant question.
Sure.
From the waist down, you said you have no feeling. So then it's sort of counterintuitive. Why do you have so much pain if half of you is not feeling any pain?
And that's my great hope. The fact that I still have feeling of some type, even though it's excruciating. At this minute when I'm talking to you, it feels right now like I'm standing up in a 50-gallon drum of water, and the water's boiling. That's what it feels like to me right now. Before the accident, if I had this kind of pain, I wouldn't be talking to you. I couldn't really focus on it. I learned to live with it, basically, without using chemicals. I don't take any pain medication. Occasionally, I'll take an ibuprofen or something. It's usually not related too much to my legs or back pain. So after I got out of Peconic Landing, a parent of a student that I used to tutor, I still volunteer tutor every day, kids that want to come by and learn anything about science. But a parent contacted me and said, there's a company out in California. They deal with people that are experiencing some type of anxiety because they're going to have some surgery or they're taking chemotherapy or something like that. And he said, they use virtual reality. And I'd like you to look into that. So we contacted the company. They actually sent a person out here. They sent me an entire setup for virtual reality, a set of goggles basically with a cell phone really inside of it. And they had programs that you could design to kind of take your mind off of things. The company is called Applied VR in California. I have no financial connection to them or anything like that, but they were so good to me because what I learned is that everything they wanted to know about VR and patients of any type, they wanted to do it based on science. While I was using VR here in the house, I was taking quite a few opioids every day, oxycodone in particular, to deal with the pain. And I started using the VR, and I found that I'd get, these terrible waves of pain and everything. But if I was using the VR, I could focus away from it a little. And I talked to them about that, and they said, that's really interesting.
They didn't know that.
They thought it might be true, but they weren't certain. So I kept graphs of how many hours a day I'd put VR on and how much pain medication I was taking. I tried to reduce it myself. The ultimate way I reduced it was I worked with my therapist from Peconic Landing. So she had me wean myself off. Instead of six times a day, I'd take the regular pills five times, and the sixth time, I'd only take half a pill. And I got it down to eventually really no pain medication at all. It took 6 months. Well, the people from Applied came out and they did an interview. We showed them with data, if you do this, it actually helped me get off the medication. And so they thought that was really thrilling. So what they did is they've actually developed in their company a focus on pain remediation without using other chemicals or in conjunction with using pain medications. Anyway, their company, they've gotten away from just anxiety to now reducing pain medications. Once they put a little YouTube together, I got a call from a lady in New York City. Her name was Helen Oyang, and I thought she was a reporter from the New York Times. She wasn't a reporter at all. What she was a doctor in an emergency trauma center in New York City. She was concerned about the very first thing they give people is pain meds. And so she wrote an article for the New York Times. A short time after that was published, a man out in California had read it, and his name was David Sharp. He has a podcast, and that's what I was hoping some of your listeners could turn to. The podcast is called Painopolis. Painopolis. And it discusses different ways that people have of dealing with chronic pain. He was interested in VR.
Was he comparing VR to other modalities?
Or? Yes. He feels that VR, eventually, it's already working its way into training of occupational therapists and physical therapists. He believes that very soon it's going to be part of all medical training, including nurses and doctors. And he feels that med schools should be going towards this because this is a very non-invasive method of really controlling some way the pain.
And non-toxic as well.
And non-toxic as well. Those people that applied, they then developed an entirely new VR system. They put a device on me where they were actually monitoring my breathing, my heart rate. Basically, it's biofeedback, where you concentrate, you try to slow your heart down, you be aware of your breathing, and so on and so forth. And they had all these visuals, these little trees with bubbles, and if you followed in the right direction, the tree would suddenly start blooming, and leaves would come out, and flowers would develop, and things like that.
I don't understand how the biofeedback works.
Okay, well, if you're doing something correct, you'll see if you're really reducing your heart rate, the leaves will start growing, or bubbles will start flowing.
And I see.
If the bubbles don't start flowing, you're not slowing it down enough.
I see. So it's not just distracting you.
No, it's not just distracting.
It's actually training.
It's training. It's definitely training.
Okay.
And that was the second, to focus really away from pain and reducing your anxiety in that way.
Converting it in a way into a game, I suppose.
Right. In some way, a game. Now, the people out in California have VR programs specifically for children, a program specifically for adults. They sent me one, and I shared it with the people up at Peconic Landing. There was one man there. He was watching Swimming with the Dolphins, and you could see his head was moving back and forth. And the therapist said, look at his head. Normally, he can't even move his head, and now he's looking at the dolphins. He's looking all over at it and not complaining about the pain at all. The thing about Applied, they didn't want some, you know, testimonial from somebody. They wanted to know, like with the opioids, how much you were taking, how much you were watching their productions.
Not on a 0 to 10 scale, how
exactly.
much pain you're feeling.
Exactly. After I'd gone through all this and I listened to some of the podcasts on Painopolis, which were great, a lady called me from California and said, I was listening to Painopolis and I heard about how you're dealing with pain. And she said, I'd like to come and visit and talk to you. Well, she came and spent the whole afternoon here. When she left, she had all my Applied VR with her. I gave her everything.
The equipment, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You were not using it anymore, is that
no,
it?
No, because I've learned the tricks that they helped me with. It's helped me, it really has. So I gave her all my equipment. She kept it for a year. We talked several times. Mm-hmm. She said it helped her somewhat, but now she's microdosing hallucinogenic mushrooms. That's how she's dealing with the pain. But she said it certainly wasn't a waste of time.
Okay.
That was one of the things I was really concerned about when I was at Rusk, and I talked to him about that. What I noticed is, and it's heartbreaking to see it, but there were so many young people there with broken necks, where they were paralyzed, quadriplegic, or some like me with a broken back and just their legs weren't working. But the one thing I noticed about all the young people is that they were pushing that pain button all the time for pain meds, all the time. And one of the young men there, I told him, just try to go for 10 or 15 minutes without pushing that button. He said, but it hurts. And I said, I understand, but you can do it. And he was doing little experiments with it, trying to go longer and longer without pushing it. What I found out is young people, they don't have pain usually. And so when they do experience pain, it's really traumatic to them. I think when you get older, you know, we have aches and pains, and that threshold changes. So I think older people deal with pain better. It's not any more pleasant, but they deal with it better. These young people, they didn't have the desire. I wanted to get off of them from the first day, and I noticed my sense of humor was going away. And so I knew I was changing. And that's when I went to the therapist and I said, I've got to get off these things. And she said, we'll work you off them gradually, but she said, it won't be easy. That week, on Friday, I went home and just didn't take any for the weekend. What a disaster that was. Monday, I went in and I took the pain meds like you couldn't believe, and I couldn't stop the pain because I had, you know, overabused, my body that way. So she said, we'll do it gradually. And so we did.
Bob Jester is talking about pain management after his accident. This is North Fork Works and Hazel Kahn on WPKN Radio.
One of the things I learned about overuse of certain pain medications and everything, that's such a real bad part of our medical system, that they speed things up so much. They're driven to use pain medication. Oh. They get this kind of therapy done in that short of a time.
So it's collapsing.
And like so many things in life. Mm-hmm. And it's something that should be addressed. When the pain comes on,
just like it just now did.
Yeah. If you're busy, it's a good thing. I mentioned to you when we talked briefly last week that one of the things that I found extremely valuable to me, and I did this ever since I've retired even, I volunteer for any young person that wants to do anything in science that I can help them with, to tutor them or review for a test or work with a lab report or something like that. And just this last week, I had kids here from Southall School, from Mattituck School, Riverhead School, and we were reviewing for living environment, what they used to call biology, Regents exam. I've got a daughter that works at Riverhead, and just recently we were at her class doing a really, really great lesson, a fun time for me. But it's a big, big deal for me to get into the van and drive myself there. And
when did you stop teaching?
I've been out of teaching for 12 years now, and I still love teaching, you know. It's always rewarding when you work with kids like that.
I know you don't charge for any of that. Why not? Why don't you charge?
Well, I'm at a point in my life, if I've got, seriously, and I'm very serious about this, if I've got a roof over my head, and the house is warm, and there's food in the refrigerator, and the toilet flushes, believe me, that's all you need in life. So I've gotten to the point where I know what's important to me, and one thing that's very important to me is that I leave this rock that we live on a little bit better than I found it. And the only way I can do, you know, to really improve and leave it a little bit better than I found it is take care of the future generations. And I know that sounds corny, but I believe it in my heart.
Another way you talked about that was you were a volunteer fire department man for since you were 18, I think, which is
yes,
the earliest
I
you can...
Yes, I joined when I was 18. Yeah. My dad was a fireman also, and my son was a fireman until he moved.
When you're wearing that hat, you told me that firemen are becoming an extinct species.
Yeah. Anyone that goes past a fire scene where they're putting out a house fire or a car fire or a grass fire or anything only has to wait until they take their helmets off to see that most of them are gray hair out here. The departments are aging, and there are fewer and fewer younger people able to join. When I joined, there was basically a three-year waiting list. You had to wait for somebody to die, and they had a limit of the number of members they could have in the company. Right now, no company is at capacity. My own right now, we're really concerned about not having any young members.
You're still a member of the fire department.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Even though you don't go on calls.
No, I can't go on calls, but just as I mentioned to you the other day, the fire department has been very supportive of me, and as much as any doctor... They've been important in my life since this accident.
Well, they're your brethren.
They are. You don't realize it. You know, I went so many times to trainings where we train for how to cover when a helicopter lands. But I can still remember seeing the trucks and the members of the Southall Fire Department standing around the trucks when they put me in the helicopter. And I realized, my God, they're there for me. They went through all that training. They went through all that planning. This helicopter was arranged because somebody had the foresight to realize that someday that somebody was going to be in trouble, and all the planning fell into place.
So while you were in that critical condition, you...
I can still remember the number of times I went and stood by when someone was being loaded onto the helicopter, not realizing at all how important that was to that person. But I got a good lesson that day, I'll tell you. And I remember waking up at Stony Brook. My family was the only ones allowed in to see me immediately after the surgery. I woke up and there's a fireman standing there from Greenport. And he said, "Can I get anything, Bob?" I said, "How'd you get in here?" And he said, "Don't worry." And with that, a nurse comes in and said, "Who are you?" And Bob said, I'm part of his family." She said, "You get out of here." And he wasn't, you know, he was just a fireman. Even when I got back and I handed in my resignation, I asked my wife to take over my gear. I said, "I can't be a fireman anymore." They rejected my resignation. They wouldn't accept it. They sent me a letter, and the letter is pinned up in the firehouse right now in the locker. It says, "When you're ready to take this on your own, it's yours." And they have my gear hanging up. They're kind of challenging me to someday stand up and grab my gear again and take it. When I was getting out of Rusk, one of the things that concerned me was how I was going to get into the house here. I said, "I'm going to have to get some kind of ramp or something." And my wife didn't say anything, but when we got home, she just opened the garage door, and I look one side of the garage wall, and going across the back is the most beautiful ramp you could imagine. And a group of firemen came over and built that for me.
While you were in the hospital?
While I was in the hospital, they paid for everything. Then one day they called me over to the fire department. They said they had some questions. They were doing an article about an old antique fire truck that I gave to the fire department years ago. So I get in the firehouse. This a red van parked right in the middle of the truck bay. And I said, what are they buying a van now for the for a chief or something, and they go, no, this is your van, and they push a button, and the van drops down to the floor, and a door opens, and a ramp comes down. I've never in my life been so, first of all, tricked, because firemen aren't good at keeping secrets. For them to have kept a secret like that, but that was my new, I'm not trying to say anything bad about people that are you know, in any way injured or anything, but I call it my cripple van. And I told the fire department, I said, I can't take this. And they said, well, you're going to take it because we already bought it. So I said, what I will do, though, is when I don't need it anymore, I'll make sure it comes back to you. So I've already told my wife, make sure it goes back to them, you know, if something happens or if one day I get up and start walking.
Well, let's hope that day is on the horizon. So is that the van that's out there
out
now?
There,
the red
yes.
van?
Yes.
Yeah. You're still using it?
Oh, yes. Oh, it's my lifeline.
What is it like to drive?
Oh, I can show you. It's got hand controls, so I can drive it. So I roll in up
the
ramp.
Did you have to get a special license?
No. I've done well with it. Don't go much further than Riverhead, but...
How does it work?
Well, it's got hand controls. I lower the van, I drop the ramp down, I roll up the ramp. Then I put my wheelchair right alongside the driver's seat and jump into the driver's seat, transfer on, and it works well.
You're not using VR anymore for biofeedback. You gave the equipment away. They've now given it back to you.
Yep, and it's going to go.
And you're going to go somewhere else.
It's going to go to someone out here at Conic Landing.
So what has replaced it then in your pain management?
Really, it's these other things. I can't, if I let myself be idle, it's a problem. When those pains come on and I, you know, I'm gritting, right after that, they'll take a deep breath and I'll do, you know, I can feel myself slowing down and the pain is something I can deal with. And the same thing is true when I'm tutoring kids.
So, Bob, I'm still feeling a need to know a little bit more about where VR is going. In your life, it's not really part of your life.
No, but...
In itself, other than that you're an agent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
but,
I've told...
But so... What is going on? I mean, is it important? We've all heard of virtual reality for a long time.
Yep.
And I think probably some people know about it for pain management. But is it still an important force?
I think it's
force?
Just in the early stages of its development. I really do.
And you intend to keep on being involved in it?
Oh, very definitely. I told this doctor that does the Painopolis podcast, anything I can do to support this, because he's 100% behind trying to get this as a part of medical training, as an option, not as a solve all kinds of problems or anything. But if I'm one of those kids that are crying for pain medication in the city, takes a half hour more before they have to take it, that's well worth it.
What does he do then? How does Payopolis...
His podcasts are all on different ways of controlling pain.
Are they actually things you listen to and do, or you're just learning about...
You're just learning about it. He talks about it.
And then they have to go somewhere else to actually learn
yes,
how to
yes.
do it from themselves.
That's why I mentioned that Applied Company, Applied VR, and Painopolis are two great places to start if they're researching how to deal with chronic pain.
This is something we had talked about earlier, before, not in this conversation. You know, you said you want to leave some part of you on this earth when you leave. And... firemen in particular have always interested me. They are very brave people. I mean, they go into these situations that nobody else does. What does it take to be somebody who will go and do things like that? Some people are thrill seekers. Firemen are not thrill seekers.
That's for certain. When you're younger, there is a degree of thrill seeker involved, you know, racing off to a fire and blowing a siren and things like that. But
why do they do it? Why
well,
do you
I,
do
I'll
do
tell
it?
You, I think... The heroic thing about being a fireman is the day you join, because you made a commitment that you do things that scare you. You really made that commitment. You'll do things that scare you if it'll help someone else.
So that's the secret ingredient then, is wanting to help somebody else so much so that it actually scares you to do it.
Yep.
So what is that? Is that, again, is that just some people are born that way?
I think everybody has a degree of that in them. I remember, this is kind of strange, but I had a college professor once who brought in a hand grenade and he threw it on the ground. And one of the kids ran over and grabbed it and threw it across the room. And he said, that's a survival instinct. There was a kid from our school, from Riverhead High School, that went off to Vietnam. And the story of Garfield Langhorn, if anybody's researched that, a hand grenade came into a foxhole. And there were several other soldiers in that foxhole. He dove on the hand grenade and was killed. Everybody else was saved. That's a type of human behavior that's imprinted in you, I think, genetically. I think we have a predisposition to trying to protect others when there's a real, real bad situation. I think it's, you know, something that's imprinted in us genetically that says we are our brother's keepers, if you know what I mean. We have an obligation to help people in time of need. Since I can't go to fires anymore, and I was really going to resign from the fire department, they allowed me to be elected as a warden. Now, the wardens, except at a fire, the wardens run the department. And being a warden is basically a position that's normally allocated to former chiefs, but they let me be a warden. And so you make every decision financially and about all policies for the department. The only time you're not in control is during a fire alarm when the chiefs are in control. And so that's quite an honor. So I've been able to stay involved in that. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, but that's part of my pain remediation. They've let me be the secretary of our Marine squad, and I do all the paperwork for them and everything. So that's important. Again, that's part of how I control the pain. A lot of times I get out going, I don't want to go over there. You know, I don't want to get into the car and go to the meeting and everything. But I get over there, and the pain will come several times, but I kind of ignore it.
So it's really painful for you to get into the car and do all of that.
It's always painful to move down the road. It's just extremely painful.
To be in the car moving,
in the car moving, any bump.
The bumpiness.
Oh, it's horrible. Just horrible.
And you just don't take any meds at all?
No pain meds at all, really.
So could you do biofeedback as you're getting in, you just settled into the car before you leave?
Yep.
Yeah, that's when you
it
do
helps
it.
Me every step of the way. And the same thing, you know, going to meetings and everything helps me every step of the way. The other things the department has let me do, I've done the training on sexual harassment.
Well, the way you say let you do, I object to your saying it that
well,
way.
Well,
I don't like the way it sounds.
I know what it is.
I think they should be glad that you're able to do
they
it.
They are glad, and they're doing it on purpose. It's just like...
somebody else would have to do it.
Well, somebody else would, but they'd hire somebody to do it. But I've taught classes even over in West Hampton on chimney fires and how to put them out safely without damaging the house too much or without injuring a firefighter. So they were important to me, those type of classes. And I say let me, but they know it's a gift to me, I think. But they feel it's a gift to them. I understand what you mean.
Okay,
but
I'm standing up for you here since you're not going to stand
understand.
Up for yourself.
I understand. Oh, goodness.
Well, listen, I think we should stop in a minute.
Okay.
I mean, we've definitely done a completely different interview for the one I thought we've covered everything, but in a very different way. I didn't think we'd be talking about pain management. I thought we'd be talking about VR as a thing. But I'm glad that you wanted to do it this way. Is there anything else you want to say to anybody out there who is suffering from great pain and having difficulty managing it?
If they have any questions or any comments or concerns, to call Bob Jester. And my name's in the phone book. Phone number is 631-477-1868. If they have any use for VR equipment or anything, I'd be glad to lend them mine if it's not being used, or to talk to them about, you know, how I'm dealing with it and how they're dealing with it.
You've been listening to Bob Jester talking about the ways he's managed his pain after his accident. You can hear North Fork Works on the first Wednesday of the month, right here at this time, and any time at all as podcasts on hazelkahn.com. If you've enjoyed this North Fork Works interview and all W.P. Cairn's great interview programs, please support our work by making a donation on wpkn.org. Thank you very much. I'm Hazel Kahn.